Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to the broadcast. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And for this Saturday, February 13th, we are broadcasting our very special Daytona pre-Valentine's Day episode. And in that vein, we're going to talk racing with Stephen Light. Coming up in the second hour, our NASCAR race car driver, who is also our Unlock Your Wealth protege this season. And we also have Minutes on Your Money, Valentine's style. Yes, we are going to talk about love and money, the two things that don't seem to mix quite so well. Thank you so much for joining us this Saturday. And welcome to the broadcast. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of creating financial independence. And this week, our key this week is Break the Budget from our Keys to Riches series. So for those of you who have been with us this season and have been prodigiously saving those receipts, this will be the week and we break them out and review them. Additionally, we have so much in store. As always, Karen Gurm will bring her regularly scheduled segment with News by the Numbers. We also have Minutes on Your Money, your Millionaire Minute, and Special Investor's Edge guest is Larry Winget. You'll be totally excited to meet Larry. He is the world's most irritational speaker. He's got a new book out, but one of my favorites, time-tested and true, You're Broke Because You Want to Be. So we're going to meet with him a little bit later in the broadcast and talk about his book and money management and wherever the conversation goes with us. Also, in the second hour, in addition to famous NASCAR race car driver Stephen Light, we will also have our featured key this week from the Keys to Riches program. The Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. So each week we feature a different key, and we have been moving toward financial independence for the last 6 weeks, and this week is no exception, because we are going to actually have the rubber meet the road this week with our key of Break the Budget, because budgeting is kind of like dieting. It's something you go on to and off of. So instead, in the second hour, we're going to learn how to create a healthy savings and spending plan instead. On to Minutes on Your Money. How about 5 ways to save your marriage? From CNBC.com, if you're looking to show your spouse how much you care this Valentine's Day, bag the gift or the night out and get your credit cards paid off instead. It may lose points on the romance scale, but the gesture is guaranteed to yield dividends in the long-term stability of your relationship, says Jeffrey Du, a faculty fellow at the National Marriage Project and assistant professor of family, consumer, and human development at Utah State University. Du goes on to say, positive financial behavior can enrich a marriage. When couples set goals together and they both contribute towards that goal, including financial ones, it strengthens the marital bond. Indeed, the negative effects of poor money management have been widely established as one of the leading causes of divorce. But the opposite is true as well. Couples who save together stay together. Fewer fights and more teamwork as a result. Why? For one thing, those who practice good financial judgment are far less likely to accumulate debt, a significant source of stress in many marriages. According to Due Study, Bank On It, thrifty couples are the happiest, published by the National Marriage Project's 2009 State of Our Unions report. Debt fuels a sense of financial unease, which increases the likelihood couples will fight over both money matters and non-financial issues. His report notes that newlyweds who take on substantial consumer debt become less happy in their marriages over time, while newlywed couples who paid off any consumer debt they brought into their marriage or acquired early in their marriage had lower declines in their marital quality over time. By keeping a grip on your spending habits, Due adds that you'll not only reduce the incidence of conflict in your relationship, but also enjoy each other's company more, which increases the amount of time you'll spend together. Communication and cooperation. The mere process of sitting down together to monitor your household budget has another positive impact on relationships as well. It keeps the channels of communication open, making it easier to engage in other difficult discussions like caring for elderly parents, career changes, and child rearing, says Olivia Mellon, a money coach and psychotherapist with MoneyHarmony.com in Washington, D.C. Her advice is to meet once a month to review your monthly budget, even if one spouse has the responsibility of actually paying the bills. She also advises establishing ground rules for discretionary spending. Say, anything over $200 must be discussed in advance. Assets equal happiness. Unsurprisingly, Due's research found financial stability also makes marriages happier. Couples with no assets at the beginning of a 36-month period were 70% more likely to divorce than couples with $10,000 in assets. Hey, I guess that's why they have dowries, huh? Come to the table with some cash in this marriage, will ya? Anyway, I digress. While assets decrease the likelihood of divorce, however, the protective power of assets only works for wives, Due notes, largely because wives with more marital assets report being happier in their marriage overall and as a result were less likely to seek a divorce. It's also, however, because assets made wives more reluctant to pursue a divorce because they realized that their standard of living would fall markedly after a divorce. And couples need not be on the brink of bankruptcy or job loss for financial issues to impact their marriage either. Decisions like whether to make a major purchase using consumer credit or how much of a paycheck to put into savings can have a substantial consequences on the short-term and long-term health of a marriage. Due writes, in particular, couples who are wise enough to steer clear of materialism and consumer debt are much more likely to enjoy connubial bliss. And how about same-sex couples? I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the air, but same-sex couples face different pitfalls. If you're a same-sex couple looking to tie the knot this Valentine's Day, there's good news and bad news. The good news is that a handful of states have changed their laws to allow gay and lesbian couples to legally marry or at least to legally recognize out-of-state marriages. The bad news is that many other states, as well as the federal government, still don't recognize these marriages as legal. This means that while you may have some rights in the state where you live, in order to fully protect your union, there is a lot of planning that needs to be done, from creating a comprehensive estate plan and understanding how to properly file your taxes to protecting yourself when traveling out of state. It doesn't matter where you get married as far as the federal government is concerned, says Jim Titus, the financial consultant with Schwab, adding the federal government does not treat same-sex couples as married couples, and this creates financial and tax implications. In order to ensure that you and your partner are adequately protected, the first must-do financial item is to create a will and a trust. If you die and there is no will in place, there is no guarantee that your partner will receive a thing. Titus explains that in the absence of a will, that the laws of the state take over and it may award the assets to a conventional family member. He adds that even with a will in place, it doesn't guarantee that your partner will receive anything, as far as family members can contest the will and may end up receiving some or all of that property that was meant for your partner. That's where a trust comes in. Creating a revocable trust will allow the partners to dictate who will receive what and at what time of death. It doesn't escape the tax, the estate tax laws, but it is a great advantage to same-sex couples to have a trust in place as opposed to letting the state dictate, says Titus. What you need to do is in order to get a full understanding of gift and estate taxes that apply to same-sex couples, it's essential to speak with an estate planning attorney or a tax advisor. Suzette Rutherford, an estate planning attorney and certified financial planner with Rutherford Asset Planning, says it's also essential that same-sex couples have advanced medical directives in place, including a healthcare proxy, which is a document that designates someone to make medical decisions in the event that a patient becomes incapacitated. Your partner is going to be concerned about your health but will have no rights unless you designated by a health proxy. She also recommended having a durable power of attorney in effect. The document ensures that if one of the partners becomes incapacitated, the person with such powers can step in on financial matters. She adds that these financial decisions not only apply to properties outside of a trust, or I'm sorry, that these financial decisions only apply to property outside of a financial, outside of a trust. Holy cow. A HIPAA authorization form is also a document that you may want to consider, as it allows your partner to have access to your medical records. And of course, some things don't change, and one of them is taxes. According to Joan Berta, an estate planning attorney and author of Estate Planning for Same-Sex Couples, when it comes to taxes, same-sex couples need to keep as detailed records as possible, which means preparing individual and joint tax returns for both state and federal taxes, even if you cannot file them. This is necessary to avoid other issues that may arise in such areas as real estate. For instance, if you are legally married in your state and apply for a mortgage as a married couple, the banks ask to see tax returns. However, because the federal government doesn't acknowledge same-sex marriages, which requires you to file independently, a discrepancy will result. It will be important to show that you have prepared a joint return and that you disclosed on your independent return that you were unable to file jointly but would have if you could have. Real estate, says Berta, can be particularly tough to navigate. In addition, putting a partner's name on real estate without talking to a lawyer can trigger gift tax problems. For example, Schwab's Titus says, if you own a $500,000 house and you make your partner a co-owner, it is considered a gift of $250,000. That exceeds the $13,000 annual tax-free gift limit. If you're traveling out of state, particularly with adopted children, it can also create major problems for couples. If you live in a state where same-sex marriage is legal, in that state you have full protection of the law. But if you travel and are in a state that doesn't recognize same-sex marriage, all of the documents you may have may not be valid if something should happen to that child. You've got a lot of challenges in a state that doesn't recognize marriage or second parent adoption, for instance. If the biological parent dies in an auto accident, the children may be removed even if his or her partner had adopted the children. In another example, Berta cites a couple on a cruise at which time one suffered from an aneurysm. Even though the couple had advanced directives, it was hours before the healthy one was allowed to see the partner and be consulted about medical treatment. Because of these issues, Berta says many same-sex couples, especially those with children, never leave their state, and those that do travel with a lot of documents. So if you're planning to marry or already have, you're in need of legal and financial advice for your own protection, whenever and wherever. Well, it is time for our first guest.
I am so excited about this week's guest because I like his go-against-the-grain kind of style. This week, our Investor's Edge guest is Larry Wingan. Larry is a five-time, not one, two, three, four, a five-time New York Times Wall Street Journal best-selling author. He is a member of the International Speaker Hall of Fame. He has starred in his own television series and appeared in national television commercials. He is a regular contributor on many news shows on the topics of money, personal success, in business. Some of Larry's most recent appearances has been starring in A&E's Big Spender. He's been on CNBC's The Millionaire Inside, and he has his own PBS special, among a litany of other things. He is also appearing on the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today. Larry is unique. No one does what he does from the platform. No one says what he says, and certainly no one looks like he looks. He is the trademarked pit bull of personal development and the world's only irritational speaker. So welcome to the broadcast, Larry. I'm so excited you're here with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I do appreciate it.
I like so much, and I know it sounds kind of ironic when I go to say this, but I like your go-against-the-grain kind of style.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think it's interesting that these days people refer to me as go-against-the-grain, and I was recently interviewed about the new book, Your Kids Are Your Own Fault, and they said, you know, everything that you're saying in this book is so politically incorrect. And I said, you know, it's just a damn shame when in life we've gotten to the point that taking responsibility, being fiscally responsible, asking people to be accountable for their actions, doing the right thing in every situation, not when it's convenient, but every time, whether it's convenient or not, doing those things has become politically incorrect. I think that's a shame. But you're right. Sadly, that's where we are.
It's a crying shame. And where we became sheep, herded into this mentality that the things that are appropriate and should be accountable as appropriate is all of a sudden inappropriate. Oh, you shouldn't talk about that. You shouldn't say those things. I've had guests on the show that, because they represent a nonprofit organization and their desire is to further the mission of their organization, are afraid to call people out and make statements that may not be politically correct but are entirely accurate of what people are doing. One of which, I'm a big supporter of a financial literacy in all forms, and I champion anyone who furthers that cause, and I really enjoy You're Broke Because You Want to Be. And one of the things that is so difficult today is the folks that are our supposed role models are now endorsing products that keep their own people down. And I always say this, Magic Johnson sits there and does those rent-to-own commercials, and there's no way that somebody is going to get ahead when they pay five times the amount of the price of a refrigerator.
I know it, and then, you know, I just wrote about this last week when Jerry Springer's sidekick and a Watergate criminal and the guy from Law and Order and the guy from Oz are telling you to buy gold at its all-time high as a smart financial investment. You need to pay attention to who you're getting your financial advice from.
I know, and it's hard because, you know, what we want to do in life is, and it's a big part of what I teach in neurolinguistic programming, is to pattern other behaviors that appear to be successful. And I have a hard time with the hypocritical advice that's out there, people saying one thing, but personally they're choosing to do another.
Nobody knows more people in the self-help industry than I do, believe me. And there are more people in doing sales training who can't sell their own sales training, leadership speakers who can't hire or keep employees, customer service speakers and trainers, and guys who write best-selling customer service books who don't know how to return a phone call, and people telling you how to be successful who don't have a clue themselves. You are absolutely right. There are more hypocrites in the industry who say one thing and do another. But pretty much, that's where we are in life. We all say we want one thing, but we don't back it up. And, you know, I wrote a book called People Are Idiots, and I Can Prove It, based on that one premise, how our actions contradict our words.
And why do you think that is?
Because we get by with it. People will do whatever they can get by with. You know, that's my whole approach to the parenting thing, is that people will pretty much do whatever they can get by with. Kids will, but so will our senators, and so will our sports figures, and so will you and I. We'll do whatever we can get by with until someone holds us accountable for it. And that's what we have to start doing. We have to draw some lines in the concrete, not lines in the sand, and start saying, this is good behavior, this is bad behavior. No, you're not going to get by with at least treating me bad. There's got to be more black and white, right or wrong, good or bad. There's no gray.
I agree with you. I think that is the key, whether it's your personal accountability for your personal or professional development, your financial development, you know, your parenting skills. The one thing that's missing in all of this is a level of accountability that's truly accountable.
Well, I'm pretty much a one-trick pony. I said for years I only got one idea, and it's personal responsibility, and I've taken that through, you know, two personal development books, a straight-up business book, a personal finance book, and a parenting book. I take that one theme and drive it across all lines to remind people that, and if I had a philosophy of life, it would be this: your life's your own fault. It was your thoughts, your words, your actions that created the life you've got. Somebody last week said, why do you have to be so negative and say everything's your own fault? And I said, you know, fault is not a negative word. You know, my success is my own fault, too. You know, all the good things that happen to me are also my fault. It just is a different way of looking at responsibility and accountability in that I created the life that I'm living.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's significant because that's the one thing that so many people glaze over is where is your personal accountability? Where do you decide this is where I am going to accept responsibility for my obligations and I'm actually going to act in a responsible fashion? I have the ability to respond, but I'm choosing not to.
That makes people uncomfortable. In the book, You're Broke Because You Want to Be, I have a section in there that I hear in fact, I'm the only guy I've ever heard talk about. One of the keys to turning your financial life around is the element of remorse. I want people to feel bad, which means first you have to go to the mirror, look yourself in the eye, and say, I've been an idiot. You need a Jimmy Swagger moment where you kind of look to the heavens and have tears run down your face and say, oh, Lord, I've been stupid. Forgive me. And see, I think that's what we have to do, but we don't like to do that because that would be admitting that it's our fault that we've created this mess. It's much easier to lay blame outside of ourselves on the government or on those predatory lenders or on the credit card companies or the fact that we just didn't keep our word. We don't want to do that.
Well, abdication of responsibility is king these days, for sure. I just read an article and shared it with our listeners last week about people not feeling guilty about walking away when they have the ability to repay their mortgage, but because they've lost so much value, they're choosing to walk away.
I was on a panel on a television show about that with me and three other guys in suits, and they all said that it was perfectly all right. And there's a University of Arizona, that might be the article you're referring to, this University of Arizona, I believe, professor that talked about here, at least in the state of Arizona where I'm from, saying that it's perfectly legal to walk away from your mortgage, whether you can afford to pay it or not. And these three financial experts I was on a panel with all said that it was fine to do that. And I said, but guys, it's not morally right to do that. If you have the ability to pay your loan and you gave your word you would, you signed a contract saying you would do it as long as you could do it, it's wrong to walk away when you have the ability to make those payments. And one of the guys said, Larry, it may be morally okay, but it's not financial. And I said, stop right there. Once you say morally, you don't get to put but after it. If it's the morally right thing to do, you stop right there and just do it. But right now, that's not the popular approach. You're right. People are wanting to walk away from their mortgages even when they can afford to pay it.
But, you know, a lot of these folks, and some are really hardworking middle class, and some of these other folks, I mean, this whole mortgage situation has to do with lack of integrity to begin with. I've been doing this show since 2003, and in 2004, I had a caller, and I'm in Arizona as well, and I had a caller saying, when do you think this real estate bubble is going to pop? And I said to him, because at the time I was still in mortgages, I hadn't quite jumped the fence into real estate, And I said to him, I said, you know, that's not the bubble you got to watch for. And he was like, really? And I said, yeah. I said, it's the mortgage bubble. It's going to be more massive and more devastating than anyone could ever hope to imagine. And he asked me why. And I said, because. I said, we have loosened the guidelines to mortgage underwriting so much that anybody, because they have the desire to have a house, not the ability or willingness to make the payment or the commitment level to follow through on all of that, but all they have to do is have the desire to have a home, and voila, they're in. Somebody will fake some W-2s. Somebody will create some bank statements, and then you
have
Photoshop.
And then we want the stated income only. You're right.
Yeah. And, yeah, and then we didn't even have to forge those anymore because the banks.
That's right.
Whatever.
We didn't have to lie. We just had to say, yeah, we make
them. I know you're
making
them. Yeah, exactly. I know you're making them in the basement, so I'm just going to save you the trouble, and I'm going to use that as a way to charge you another 0.5% in interest because this is about a statistical rate of default. It's not if you're going to not pay me back. It's just about when, so I want to get as much as I can before it's too late.
Well, there were a lot of people out there that were totally, I think, I won't name names on this because I just don't want to, but who created this whole leverage yourself so much. And that's the key to success and prosperity. And people believe that, and they over-leveraged themselves and bought way too many houses and way more houses than they should have when they knew they couldn't afford it. Like you said, it was eventually going to catch up with them. And it is a matter of integrity. But very few people are going to attack folks, especially folks right now who are hurting, and say, this is your fault. You created this mess. Don't blame anybody but yourself. Go to the mirror. You created it, and I'm sorry you're now homeless or having to live in an apartment or that you had to file bankruptcy or you're having to work three jobs, but it's still your fault. That's real unpopular.
Agreed. You know, the first key in our Keys to Riches financial freedom series is acceptance and affirmation. You got to take ownership for what's gone on.
Yep.
And until you do that, and you're going to continue to live in denial. And the longer you live in denial, the longer you're going to perpetuate the misery you're going to have to address. At some point, you're going to have to address it. And
well, when I was doing my show on A&E, Big Spender, it was all about people who had just wrecked their lives financially. And those who would look at me, and I would confront them with everything they had done wrong, and I would walk them through their houses. And, you know, I had a girl with 57 credit cards and $600,000 in credit card debt. And no remorse. That's why I was talking earlier about my whole idea of remorse. No remorse. Never would accept responsibility. Those who would just kind of laugh and say, oh, you know, a lot of people get in trouble and move on, I knew they were doomed. But those who came to me and cried and felt horrible and really felt responsible for their mistakes, those are the people I knew had a shot. They might have not been guaranteed success, but they had a shot at success. So you're right. All change comes with responsibility. That's the one issue, though. It's easiest right now to forego. We don't have to take responsibility because we aren't forcing people to be accountable for their behavior.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a growing concern. And my challenge is what we're seeing in the workforce, and this attitude is prevalent amongst the younger generation who grew up where everybody gets a trophy, even if you were the crappiest kid on the team and you lost to the worst school in the district, you still got a trophy. And so there's this, you know, and I see this, you know, at the private school that my stepson used to be attending, and they, you know, this attitude of well, you were effort-based graded, not actual performance. So, well, I did it, and I'm like, well, yeah, but, you know, it's not right. And he goes, no, I'm supposed to turn it in anyway. And he's like, see, I got 100%. I'm like, 3 of the 5 math problems were wrong. I don't know how you got 100%. And then, you know, but then I go and I ask him to make his bed. If this is something you should do automatically, I shouldn't have to tell you to do this again. And then he makes it, but he does a half-assed job on it, and I'm like, No. That bed isn't made. He goes, well, yeah, it is. I did it. And I said, you know, if this was a job in the real world and that was your performance that you were turning in, you would be fired. People do not get paid for effort. in this world, they get paid for performance. And if you were working for me, I'd fire you.
Yeah, but and I believe me, I take a lot of crap over that, and I talked about a lot in my book, Your Kids Are Your Own Fault, about the whole idea of telling your kids that they're special. You see, your kid is not special. Your kid is special to you because they were born. It's their birthright to their parents to be special. They didn't have to do anything for it. To the rest of the world, it's going to be based on performance. It's going to be based on achievement. I don't care that you are. I care what you do and how well you do. But because we don't emphasize that in our society, we end up just with the problems you're talking about now. We end up with an entire society that is entitlement-based. Reward me based on who I am and the fact that I showed up, not how well I do something or the fact that I even do something.
Yeah, and that aspiration to mediocrity or just getting by is what's affecting our financial system, because there's no regard for, you know, consequences for non-performance, because nobody gets spanked anymore. They get timeouts or whatever. And you know, I remember one of my girlfriends, she said that, you know, her and her brother would talk her into, you know, causing trouble. And she's like, well, we're going to get a spanking. And he goes, yeah, but it only hurts for a little bit. But now it doesn't even hurt at all, because timeout doesn't hurt. Oh, well, I got to go sit in the corner.
I know. Consequences have to be clearly communicated in advance, and then they have to be enforced. I mean, it's the whole rule behind parenting, but it's also the whole rule in life. You know, I have a friend that manages the shoe department at Nordstrom's, and she said her biggest challenge is getting people just to show up. That she hired one young man who his first day was on a Monday, and he worked all day long and did pretty good, but then he didn't show back up until Friday. He just didn't show up for 3 days. And when he came back in, she said, well, you don't work here anymore. He just showed up like it was no big deal. And she said, you don't work here anymore. And he said, why? She said, you didn't show up on Tuesday. And he goes, you mean you really expect me to come every day?
No.
And she said, yeah, you're fired. And then she had to justify why she fired him for not showing up for work for 3 days. That's the problem. We've become so sue happy, and we don't hold people accountable and make them feel the pain of the consequences. You know, one of the things in the area of parenting and other areas of life is that we try to bumper guard the world so our kids never feel any pain. As an adult who has really, you and I talked before the show went on about that school of hard knocks, as an adult, I look at my life, everything of value that I know today, everything that's truly made me successful, I learned the hard way. I learned it from feeling the pain of my stupidity. Everything I did wrong was my best teacher. I didn't learn much from my successes. I learned everything from my failures. But we don't let our kids fail.
You nailed it right on the head, because I feel exactly the same way. I was shaped by what I learned. Ooh, that was wrong. Don't do it that way again. Try something else, until I kept trying and trying until I got it right. And one of the things that people don't realize is, instinctually, and I just talked about this in an interview I did on someone else's show, instinctually, motivation is an instinctual reaction. It's not an action. It's a reaction. And we are either motivated toward pleasure or away from pain.
Yep.
And 9 times out of 10, we're not going to move toward the pleasure. We will move away from the pain. And if pain doesn't exist, so there's nothing to move away from to kind of push us toward the carrot, because a lot of people aren't motivated by the carrot, especially this new generation that's coming up into our workforce.
Well, they were born
now
with a lap full of carrots, and nobody ever told them that the carrots could be taken away. Carrots don't motivate people who live in a land of carrots.
Exactly. And so while positive reinforcement is great, you know, you have to earn it. You can't just give somebody a trophy for being a part of the team. They have to actually contribute and be part of the success. And
well,
if you don't succeed, that's where you go, oh, I didn't get the trophy. Well, now I really want a trophy. Now I got to figure out what I got to do to get the trophy. And until we change up our system and change up the consequences, I think we're going to still keep getting the same results that we have right now today.
Well, you know, in my introduction, you call me the world's only irritational speaker, which I've trademarked, and because that's so, I'm so opposed to the whole idea of motivational speaking. You see, if there's one thing I know, I can't make you feel good enough about over there to go over there. But I can make you so irritated with where you are right now that you'll do anything to go over there. My goal in everything that I write and everything that I say from the stage, everything I do, is to make people irritated with where they are, uncomfortable with where they are, because I don't think we move until we're first uncomfortable with where we are.
You know, you're right. I always say that the people do not change until the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same. And that's why, while it's great to have incentives, if people say, oh, you're so negative, sometimes you got to turn up the consequences. Maybe people aren't motivated by, oh, yeah, well, if you do this, I'm going to give you this. And you got to turn the tables and say, well, if you don't do this, this is the consequence. And they have to feel that pain before they'll move toward the pleasure. It's just, it's an amazing thing to me because I'm pretty pleasure driven. So, and I think
I am
that's
too.
Because
I'm a total hedonist, but I got that way as a result maybe of feeling so much pain. Maybe you did too. That
yeah.
I don't have to feel quite as much pain as I used to have to feel to learn my lessons these days. That's one of the things I've learned over time. But you are right, and I found very few people who would agree with me, as you do on this, that we do need to kind of crank up consequences so people can feel the pain of their stupidity and emotionally tie themselves to their mistakes so they'll say, I don't want to do that again. I went bankrupt 21 years ago because I signed my name to too many papers as the president of a company, and it hurt me so. I was devastated, and I looked at my life, and I looked at my wife, and I realized, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to get rich again, but I'll guarantee you I'm not going to do these things again. The pain was so hurtful. I got rich the first time because I did grow up dirt poor. And at 13 years old, I walked into a classroom, and a kid looked at me and said, Winger, you're so poor, you only have one pair of blue jeans. And I did. And it hurt me so much. The pain was so bad. And I was so humiliated that I said, I'm not going to be like this anymore. I don't know how I'm going to get rich, but I know I'm not going to feel that pain anymore. And so it was the pain of a bankruptcy, the pain of growing up dirt poor, the pain of that I always experienced when I made the mistakes that made me realize I'm not willing to go through that again. And when we try to safeguard our kids from feeling that pain, and when we safeguard our society from feeling the pain of buying a house they knew they couldn't afford, taking out a mortgage they knew they couldn't pay back, we have cheated them, and we're going to bankrupt our country based on the fact that we're trying to save people from hurting.
Yeah, I agree totally. You know, I'm almost contemplating starting a movement to bring back to the debtor's prison. Wouldn't that
I'll
be great?
I'll be the first to join up with you.
There you go. See? See? Okay. It's a grassroots campaign. Me and you, Blair. We could do it. I'm thinking. We could do it. Yeah, because I just, the arrogance and the attitude, you know, I don't think any of those people that are walking away from their obligations now because they're not worth money, I want to know how many of those people gave back money that they made when their stock portfolio was doing well. All of those people that gave back money when their stock portfolio did well, I will let all those people out of their mortgages.
Yeah,
right,
they get a pass. I agree.
But I don't see the my door.
We expect from real estate what we never expected from anything else. The minute you buy anything, a television, a car, a piece of clothing, the instant you buy it, you automatically understand it's worth less. Everything depreciates.
Well, and the value is subject to what someone else is willing to pay for it.
That's right. But somehow we came to this point that when you bought real estate, it had to go up. It had to. And finally, we just realized in the last couple of years, that's not true. Real estate depreciates like everything else. But as long as you're enjoying it and can afford to pay for it, the deal was you said you would do it. And that's what it really comes down to me. Once you give your word, see, we're not teaching people to keep their word. We're doing it conditionally. As long as everything's in your favor, as long as things are running smooth and it's convenient to keep your word, you should keep your word. But the minute it comes inconvenient or humiliating or embarrassing or it costs you a little bit of money, you get to not keep your word anymore. That's what we're teaching people.
Yeah. Well, if the government can do it, why shouldn't we?
And that's what people write me. I mean, I get hundreds of emails every week from people saying, well, Larry, I deserve a bailout too. What the hell for? What'd you deserve a bailout? No, you don't deserve a bailout. You deserve to go to work every single day, work your butt off, and pay your bills first. They're called obligations. We don't seem to understand that obligation means you're obligated to take care of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make a commitment to someone else, you fulfill your obligation. You meet it with your ability to respond. There's that word again, response. Ability.
I know.
You know, in your Broke Because You Want to Be book, in your introduction, you talk about the difference between being poor and being broke. How do you define that difference?
Well, poor is a condition. You know, people in Haiti, they're poor. And, you know, even Jesus said the poor will be with you always. Broke is a situation you find yourself in based on the fact that you did the wrong thing. You know, when you got 40% of society spending more money than they make, that's how you end up broke. And you know, I was doing a show recently, and when I was doing the CNBC, The Millionaire Inside, I did two of those, and it said, I was watching the news, and it said, and coming up tonight, one of the country's four leading money mentors. And then a guy was interviewing me about that, and I said, I'm not really sure how I became one of the world's, the country's leading money mentors, when pretty much all I've got is spend less money than you make. But based on the fact that 40% of people don't do that, I'm a mentor. I'm a financial guru at this point.
You know what? You figured it out, and nobody else did it.
I know. Common sense. Spend less money than you make. There's an idea for you, but people don't. And when you don't do that, that's when you end up broke.
Well, yeah, it's just like situational morality. Well, if I'm in Las Vegas and my spouse doesn't find out about it, is it okay if I sleep with this person that's getting drunk next to me at the bar?
Because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah, so...
But we have situational ethics in all areas, and we certainly are able to have situational ethics when it comes to our money. Somehow we just think that, you know, a credit card, I've heard people say, well, you know, it's only a store credit card. What difference does it make? They have insurance against people like me. I've had people tell me that. They have insurance
that's
people
so
against people like me who plan on charging them up and never paying them back. Really, that's how you think?
Yeah, it's called a higher interest rate to all your friends who actually did pay their bills. Thanks.
Exactly. All of us are getting screwed because you're irresponsible. Thank you so much. We all appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, you know, in your Broke Because You Want to Be book, you talk in Chapter 6 about the stuff that most people overlook. What are some of the things that folks overlook when it comes to managing their money?
Well, I think there are lots of areas people overlook. I think that the first thing that they overlook is just taking account of where they really are. You know, I have yet to work with one person when it comes to their money, one person who really knew who they owed, how much they owed, and when it was due. I haven't really worked with people who know exactly how much money they have on hand to work with, which sounds amazing, but it's true. So first of all, I tell people, in terms of your money, figure out where you really are. Most people think that they need, you know, and I've had people write and say, what computer program should I get to manage my money? How about this, a pencil and a piece of paper?
Yeah.
You know, take it back to the basics. Write down what you have to work with. Write down who you owe and what you owe and when it's due. Figure out where you are in black and white. People overlook those basic ideas.
Well, and they get hung up in all of the other stuff. And, you know,
well, they need a plan. Most people don't operate with a plan. They don't operate with a plan when it comes to raising their kids. They don't operate with a plan as far as their future is concerned. Most people would spend more time trying to figure out what they're going to do on their day off than planning their financial future. We have no plan for the way we live our lives or spend our money. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yes, and that I'm still blown away by that. One of the younger set that works here at our company was telling me how her friend enumerated their entire itinerary, like down to, okay, then we can shower and go to this and go to that, for like a 3-day trip. And I said, seriously? And I said, so what kind of retirement portfolio does she have? What do you mean? She's 22. And I'm like, really? Because she's thought more about what she's going to do for 3 days, you know, south of the border, as opposed to the rest of her life? Why is that so intangible? Why, you know?
Yeah, you're exactly right.
I guess I don't know how the disconnect occurs, but maybe you can bridge the gap by talking a little bit about this parenting book. I've bought two copies and given them to people that I felt really needed it. And because this personal accountability is just out the window. And I thought, well, maybe if it's not me thing, and maybe if they hear the same words from somebody else, that maybe, you know, that person, you know, that's the stranger that's the expert from 50 miles away. Maybe they'll listen to that person since they won't listen to me because I'm in their face all the time. But if they hear it for, you know, a second time or a subsequent time, maybe it'll finally sink in. But where is the disconnect with this generation and what went on that their parents did or did not do that's kind of led us to this abdication of responsibility?
Well, I'm not sure, and people often ask me exactly when did this occur. I'm not sure exactly when it occurred. I think that what we did is it sort of creeped up on us and stabbed us in the back. We just kind of quit paying attention. It's like when you gain a few pounds and you go, nah, it's just a couple of pounds. It's not that big a deal. And then a few more kind of creep on. And then before you know it, you know, you're 40 pounds overweight going, crap, I'm huge. I got to fix this. And I think that's what happened to us in terms of raising our kids. We just kind of, the mess became so prevalent. We saw it on TV and then people YouTubed about it. And then we saw a skit on Saturday Night Live until we just got to the point that we go, oh, it's not a mess at all. That's just the way things are. And the way things are is we are raising a generation of kids who, from an obesity standpoint, for the very first time in history, a generation of kids who aren't going to outlive their parents. You know, we've got 25% of teenage girls with an STD, 50% of non-white girls with an STD. We've got we're ranked 27 out of 29 in education. We've got kids 13 to 17 years old who spend up to 13 cumulative hours a day messing around with technology on their iPods, watching TV, playing video games, and so forth. We've got kids who have no idea how to earn money, save money, invest money, even enjoy their money, who are clueless about a dollar and what it means. We are creating a mess in terms of our kids, and the statistics back it up.
Yeah, you know, I wonder where, and I've heard this said by other parents, and, you know, I am only a step-parent. I have not had my own child. But through my current marriage, I have a stepchild, and who's under the age of 18. And I think, you know, I look at and I listen to, and I don't know if it's I truly don't understand or if I just can't sympathize with people, but they sit there and then they tell me and they're like, well, you know, they expect their children to be as good as or greater than they are with their level of accomplishment and contribution to their lives and the world and the people around them. Yet what made that individual great is not being translated to the child because they're like, oh, well, I want them to enjoy my wealth. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's your wealth. You need to enjoy it. Your children have yet to make it. And they won't with your current parenting skills. And people flip out when I say that to them. And I'm like, how do you expect your child to be like you if they don't have similar experiences that allow them to make the decisions or at least be presented with the decisions that you had a choice to make?
Well, you know, book, I don't plan on leaving my kids a dime. I have two sons, and, you know, I plan on my last breath spending the last dollar I've got. And people say, Larry, how can you be that way about your kids? I said, you know, I left my kids something much more valuable. I left them the ability to figure out how to make money all on their own. So they don't have to rely on mine to have a good future. I taught them what it takes to be responsible and earn money and save money and invest money and do the right things on their own. I didn't cheat them of that experience. And that's exactly what you're talking about here. We cheated our kids out of that experience by giving them too much, indulging them too much, not forcing them to be responsible and accountable, and not clearly communicating expectations and then enforcing the consequences of those expectations when they weren't met.
Well, I just don't know how they could ever meet your expectations if they don't understand what it takes to fulfill them. You know, and I,
and that's what we have to be taught. And we do, and we're not doing a good job teaching that. You know, I'm not a parenting expert, and here I've just written a, you know, a best-selling parenting book. And I don't care how you raise your kids. I really don't. I care what you teach your kids. And so what my area of expertise is personal finance and success and business. And what I've done is figure out what it takes to be a successful adult. That's my area of expertise. And then I ask people to figure that out for yourself. What does it take for you to have a successful adult as a child? And then work backwards to make sure you're teaching your kids those skills so they can be successful adults. You know, our goal as parents is independence. And if you've got a 35-year-old still living in his bedroom playing video games all day and you're paying his bills for him, I'm sorry, as a parent, you're a failure. You didn't teach your kid what it takes to be a responsible, productive, successful, independent adult.
Agreed. And that's so prevalent these days, and it just blows my mind. And, you know, for me, I never wanted to go back. Once I was out, I was like, woohoo!
And
no more homemade clothes. You know, I could buy store-bought clothes, like all those things that I didn't have. I can get a lawnmower that actually, like, somebody else powers it. It's not people-powered, because I had to mow lawns with a push mower because my mother, I don't know if she didn't trust me with gasoline or, you know, or if it just was a matter of affording the gasoline. But I had a little lawn mowing business, and I mowed the lawns with a push mower. And we all had a quarter-acre minimum yards growing up because we grew up way out west. And so that was an awful lot of people-powered, you know, lawns. And so all I could think of is, I know when I have made it, because then I'll be able to afford a drive-on lawnmower. That's how I know. And then that movie Can't Buy Me Love came out, too, and I'm like, see, I should have a drive-on lawnmower. I just know it. I could make more money if I had one of those. You know, but it's like, I think about what's going on, and I think that this whole idea of safety net, I mean, our job, when I sit here and I listen to these parents who, like, can't even justify their kids' totally bad behavior, but they say, oh, well, they're just kids. They need to be kids. And I said, your role as a parent, and this is why I didn't have kids in my first marriage, because I didn't feel like I could fulfill the obligation, is not to have a child like you have a designer handbag, but you must raise a productive, contributing adult. And that's your charge. It's not to, oh, let a kid be a kid. Having fun and learning how to be responsible can be the same thing. Work doesn't have to be parlayed as something miserable.
Yeah, when I first released the book, the publisher called me, and when I turned it in, and said, Larry, we think your subtitle, you meant to say, A Guide for Raising Responsible, Productive Kids. And I go, no, I'm real clear about what I meant to say. It's a guide for raising responsible, productive adults. That's what our charge is, just like you said. You know, kids are not an accessory. What we're going to end up with is responsible, productive adults based on what we teach them, or we're going to end up with these disasters that we have right now. And so I clearly have just, my approach is a little different. I ask that people at the beginning of the book design the perfect 35-year-old. What does a 35-year-old need to know to be successful? What are they going to need to know about money? What are they going to need to know about relationships and life and all those other areas, about honesty and integrity and how to have a work ethic and all those things? Once you design the perfect 35-year-old, then you can work backward to make sure you're teaching that 3-year-old what he needs to know to become a successful, responsible, independent 35-year-old. We don't really do a very good job of doing that.
Agreed. And it doesn't have to be something so arduous. You know, I can't begin to tell you how excited my stepson gets when a new video game comes out. And he just buries his head in the book. He has to buy the collateral book for another, like, $60.
Yeah.
And he'll sit there and he'll read it cover to cover. But then when you ask him to read his school books, it's like, what? And I'm like, that's school. And I'm like, but if learning can be fun when it's to play a game, why can't learning still be fun? Why do you have to change your attitude or perception about learning when it comes to school or work. I mean, reading is a skill that you're going to need all your life. You can't be bad at it, because if you are not good at reading, you are not going to be good at many other things.
Yep.
It's going to be difficult for you to be successful if you can't read. And then if you can't read, then you're not going to be able to interpret information that people give you. Like, let's say you're good at making money because you're an inventor or an athlete or something that doesn't require reading as your primary skill to create that income. But if you can't read, like your financial statement, somebody's going to take advantage of you. Somebody's going to bilk you for all of that money. I mean, how do you create a contract with an agent if you can't read and understand what that says? Oh, by the way, he's getting 70% of your paycheck. You're like, yeah, whatever. I'm a professional football player or a hockey player.
Or you're Elvis.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. You know,
well, you know, I have a philosophy that deals with money. I read about this in Your Broke Because You Want to Be, and I carried it over into the new kids book, is that your time and your energy and your money always go to what's important to you. And if looking cool is important to you, then you're spending money at the mall. If having a financially secure future is important to you, then you will make sure that's where your time and your energy and your money goes. But the same thing also applies to parents. If having a productive, responsible, successful, independent adult is important to you, you will make sure that you put your time and your energy and your money there. And if education is important to you and in your household, then you'll make sure education is important to your child as well. You know, the bottom line statistics say that the average parent spends 3.5 minutes per week in meaningful conversation with their child. 3.5 minutes per week. So we say we love our kids. We just don't love them enough to make sure that we talk to them about important things. And we say that we want our kids to live long. And yet, you know, 1/3 of our kids are obese, and 70% of adults are 25 pounds heavier than they ought to be, at least. And so we say we care about our kids. We don't care enough to feed them right, teach them what it takes to be successful. We'll have 800,000 new smokers this year. We're not teaching them, obviously. That's important. We're not talking to them about reading or education. We're not doing a very good job. And my goal is not to change kids, because I actually don't think there are any bad kids, but I think there are a whole lot of lousy parents out there who talk a better game than they deliver. And one of the things I've discovered in releasing this book and trying to turn it into a bestseller and so forth is that you can attack people on just about any level. But when you start saying you're a bad parent, that makes people mad.
It does, but the truth hurts.
Yeah, just look at the results. That's all I go back to is, okay, you're a great parent. You know, I had a guy write me a couple of weeks ago and said, how dare you write a book saying that our kids are our fault? I was the perfect parent. And I have a kid on drugs and one who's in prison and another one that's on welfare. But I
clearly
did everything.
Clearly.
But I was the perfect parent. And I said, well, you know, I have no response to what you have to say because you were the perfect parent. All you have to do to prove that you're the perfect parent is just look at your results. You did terrific, bud. I really congratulate you. Thank you so much. I have nothing else to say to you.
Yeah, well, he was the guy that got the trophy for being on the team because he was just on the team.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, so. And that's probably how he raised his kids. But, you know, people don't want to understand the cold, hard realities of the fact that we have a mess on our hands. And if we're going to fix this mess, because this is going to affect us all. I mean, this is these kids that you see on the skateboard with a cigarette hanging out of their mouth going around the mall, that's going to be your neurosurgeon someday. And so it's going to affect all of us. So we need to step up right now and really start being responsible for what we teach our kids.
Agreed. I have to remind my 13-year-old that our posse doesn't roll with our pants under our butt cheeks. We throw them over. So, like, I'm kind of in that deal. So we're coming to the close of our time together, and I'm very sad for that because you are just such an amazing conversationalist, and I'm really enjoying my time with you. But what would be, like, a 5-point plan that people could take away from our conversation today to really get on track with their personal responsibility with regard to their lives, not just their finances, but finances, parenting, profession, whatever it is, relationships?
Well, number one, I want to go to that one issue that I just discussed. If it's really important to you, that's where you're going to spend your time and your money and your energy. So So decide in advance. All change starts with a decision. Decide in advance clearly what you'd like to have your life look like, financially, as a parent, as a professional, from a health standpoint. Look at all the different areas of your life and decide what you really want. And then understand that you don't really have to know how you're going to get there. You have to know why it's important for you to get there. You see, there's as many ways to get rich as there are rich people. It's not how you're going to get rich that matters. It's why it's important for you to get rich. It's why it's important for you to have good kids. A strong enough why, you'll figure out how you're going to do it. And then understand in advance, know this and accept it, you're going to screw up, mess up, and you're going to make a disaster of things. My point is stop, learn from the mistake, take responsibility for the mistake, but keep moving. You can't stay sedentary very long. You have to always take action. And then what I've discovered makes a real big difference, and people laugh about this, you need to stand up more. People spend way too much time on their butts in front of computers, in front of television screens, not exercising, not moving, not taking any action. If people just stood up more, they'd have a cleaner house, they'd be skinnier, they'd spend more time with their kids, they'd get more done. They'd be healthier across the board. Get off your butt and move. That's one of the things I like to remind people of. That's the simplest idea in the whole world. And the last one, you asked for a five-point plan. Remember that this ought to be fun. You need to have a good time while you're doing it. And what we've gotten to the point in our society is we're confused about what a good time is. I told a person to get their bills paid, stop charging all this money on credit cards, and they said, I don't get to have any fun. And I said, sadly, we're to the point that overspending and doing stupid things and ruining our lives in the future, indulging ourselves from a food standpoint and a spending standpoint, we think that's fun. When I it's because we agree on so much.
Well, I'm sure if we chatted longer, I'd find something to take you to task on, and then we could spar, and that's always fun, too. So consider yourself extended to the next broadcast where I'll invite you back and then we can find something and we'll keep exploring new platforms and ideas until we find something that we can bicker about.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on today. It was fun.
Oh, so glad to have you on. If people want to find you, where can they find you if they want you to come and slap their kids into shape or buy some of your books or have you speak at one of their events?
Just go to Larry Wingett, LarryWinget.com. LarryWinget.com. You can read all about what I do and see all that I have to offer. You can go in any bookstore in America right now or any of the online bookstores, and everybody's got all five of my bestsellers. It won't be hard to find them. So I'm a pretty easy guy to find. Turn on the news. I'm just about on all the news channels at least once a week. So, and I'm an easy guy to spot.
Yes. You got the shine on.
There you go.
Got the shine on top. Well, thanks again so much for joining us, and we have so much more.
Like some news by the numbers with the ever-popular, super-famous, and good-looking show producer and segment host, Karen Germ.
It's a need you gotta fill. It's news you gotta know. And news by the numbers is your favorite part of the show. Yeah.
Wow, that was weird. There was no music in the background, just the guy singing. Karen, welcome to the broadcast. Do you have any new or good news for this week in the stock market? You know, it could change the sentiment for the Daytona Valentine's weekend.
No, unfortunately, Heather, I do not have very good news this week. Hopefully, we'll get some good news soon, or I'm probably not going to be the favorite today. This week, the stocks fell after China tightened its lending. Stocks parred early losses on Friday that were caused by China's decision to tighten its lending policy to curb growth. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 45 points, or 0.4%, to 10,099, and the S&P 500 shed 3 points, or a third of a percent, to 1,076. The Nasdaq rose 6 points, or a third of a percent, at 2,184. China's central bank raised banks' reserve requirements for the second time this year to try to cool the country's economic growth. Investors fear that reining in China will hobble the economic recovery. China doesn't want to see bubbles and crashes. It just wants a smooth and steady rise, said Richard Kong, chief investment officer at Emerging Global Advisors, which is introducing a China infrastructure ETF next week. Global companies like Alcoa, Boeing, and United Tech were among the Dow's worst performers. The euro fell to its worst level against the dollar since May 2009 after Greece's gross domestic product fell by nearly 1%, building on its 0.5% contraction in the third quarter and disappointing economists' expectations. And that is your news by the numbers this week. I am Karen Gurm.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twoforthroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we finally tied him down. No more NASCAR media day, or at least not for the moment. No more physical exams or drug testing or all the other crazy things that a race car driver has to do. Our Unlock Your Wealth protege, NASCAR race car driver Stephen Light, is here with us in person again. Yay! Welcome to the broadcast, Stephen.
Hey, how you doing?
It's good to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. I know that Daytona is a crazy deal, and I know that you had to show up, even though you don't have a regular ride. You know, I know that we're still seeing how that's going. I know you're working hard on that. Do you remember the last time you were on, we talked about what we can do about our finances, and while we've been saving all our receipts for this week's Break the Budget, you did want to be proactive about a particular instance in your life, and we talked about you wanting to cut out eating out and start eating in more. Is that right?
That's right.
And so tell us, you've had a couple weeks of that now. How is that working for you?
Feel pretty good on it. It's been a slow transition. This, you know, being in Daytona, it wasn't really easy to concentrate on that. You're always out doing things, and you're always busy, so you kind of just grab what you could on the way. But now that I've been home for a couple days here, you know, it's going good. Just having the food I like in the house is helping a lot. That you get at the grocery store is not that expensive. As a matter of fact, about an hour ago, I made some tuna fish, and filled me up pretty good. So it's working slowly, but surely I'm getting there.
Outstanding. And was it a tough transition at first, or was it easier than you thought?
Well, I think the first day or two, it was actually really easy. You know, you think, oh, there's nothing to this. I got this. But then after 3 or 4 days of not, you know, not going to the places you're used to going and eating the things you, you know, you love to eat, it's like, okay, now it's getting hard. now I'm really missing those things and not wanting to eat at home as much. And you know, I've probably cut it down 50% of what I used to do eating out. So for me, that's a big, big jump. And
for you, for anybody, you should be really proud of yourself. That's a huge difference. You know, you'd be lucky if you get somebody to commit for one day, especially if the perception is that they're sacrificing. And one of the things that I really liked and felt like you were going to have some success with was when you spoke about your commitment, that you were going to do it with your roommate, your sister, where we're going to try to hoodwink your dad into cooking. So you had a way to make it like a group effort, that you had more than just yourself doing it, and it's not like everybody else was going out and you were going to be the only one at home alone because you're trying to save money, that you were actually involving the other people that are in your immediate circle that you run around with every day to help reinforce that. So I think that that's probably a good part of why you are able to stick with it, because you enjoined the power of others to support you in your goal. So that's great. I'm excited about that. This week's key is break the budget. So if you remember, in week two, we started saving receipts, and we weren't supposed to look at them. We were just supposed to stuff them in, and if we spent cash, we were supposed to make a note of that and shove that into the envelope too. So is your envelope pretty thick or overflowing yet?
It's not overflowing, but there's definitely quite a few in there. I'm afraid to look. I don't want to.
Wow, that's an honest admission. So when you do look, what do you think you're going to find?
I think I'll find that things add up a lot easier than you think they will. You know, I mean, obviously you have an idea of how much you spend normally, but I think seeing it in, you know, close up like that, and how all the little things add up, it's not the, you know, $50 eat out, and it's not the $100 this or $80 that adds up to cost so much. It's the 10 times a week $20 charges. The, you know, 8 times a week $15 charges. It's all the little ones that add up that you do so much of that you don't really pay attention to that'll get you. And I think that's probably what I'll see more than anything else.
So what do you think that this is going to say about you personally? Are you going to – what do you think it's going to say? What's the message you think that you're going to get when you start looking at stuff like that?
Well, I think once I see it, like, you know, in that light, it's going to definitely make me pay more attention to what I'm doing a lot more often. especially when I'm out and I'm not at home. And not even when it comes to food, just anything in particular, you know. Things that maybe I didn't necessarily need that I thought I did. And, you know, looking forward, I'll be like, well, if I don't necessarily need it, don't get it. And, you know, you think of, oh, it's only one charge this week, but if I don't do that for 4 weeks, that, you know, do it every month or so rather than do it every week, how much money does that save a month? And I think I'm going to find this a lot more than I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's why last week's key was so important. Take emotion out of the picture, because we can justify a want into a need real quick. Oh, but I needed that. And it's like, well, you know, did you really need that extra shot of espresso and that extra pump of sweetener and the whipped cream and all of the half-calf, double-calf things that turns your, you know, cup of coffee into a $5 experience? And, you know, saying, oh, well, I really needed that little hit. Well, yeah, maybe we need a hit of caffeine or a hit of sugar now and then, but it doesn't have to be at Starbucks. We can create our own Starbucks experience in our home. And like the way you did, in joining your friends and family members and your immediate circle of people that you live with in what you're doing, then your own house can be its own little espresso bar, and you don't have to go out to seek that. Well, I'm excited about the way you're looking at this, because a lot of people still have challenges even at this point, and that you're, before we even get into addressing these receipts, you're already thinking about it. You're one step ahead, and that's a good thing, because that's going to help you make more effective decisions once we do this. And like you said, and many other people, they don't really realize what's going to add up until they actually see it concretely. Most people don't review their debit card statements. Most people don't take a look at non-receipt items as how they can pile up on you real quick. So the fact that you're thinking about that is a good thing. Now, what we really want to do as we start out with this Break the Budget key is run and grab that envelope and grab a pencil and a piece of paper, because here's what we're going to do, and this is where the rubber meets the road.
So after you grab, and hopefully it's stuffed to the brim with receipts, that you are able to take them out and you're going to sort them out. And the way we're going to sort this is by category. And our categories are going to be all of our mortgage payment or rent receipts in one pile, all of our utility bills in another pile, all of our grocery receipts in one pile, and all of our dining out receipts in a separate pile. Because eating is a necessity, but dining out is a luxury. And so we want to make sure that we have those completely separate, so we don't inappropriately identify a higher food cost than what we really absolutely bare minimum need. And that's why we don't want to confuse those receipts. We also want to keep all the clothing receipts together. But if you have separate clothing receipts that you have to buy specific clothes for work, like work uniforms, or where you have to buy, you know, certain color clothes that you can actually get a tax deduction on, you want to kind of separate that out. Because if it's a work-related expense, it's something that you're going to have to be doing. And you want to sort every single receipt into its appropriate category. Put kids' allowances in one pile. If you write child support checks that are outgoing, you want to put that in another pile. Put all of your income sources in another pile, because we're not just doing what we spend, but we're also including what we make, because we're going to do what Paul Richards from the Institute for Commercial Finance, Consumer Financial Education, suggests, and we're going to do a big picture, and then we're going to do a small picture. And our big picture about our life is going to be our balance sheet. What we have, what we owe, and what's the difference? What's left over is our net worth. then on the small picture, that's actually going to be our close-up, and that's going to be our cash flow. And as we sort all of these receipts, what we're going to find is we're going to find out a lot of things about ourselves on this day that we do this. But one of the things that we're going to find out is, do I spend more than I make? And if the answer is yes, I'm spending more than I make, then we're going to have to address different issues as we move through this. Or am I breaking even every month? Or, oh, I have a little left over. We're going to look at all of these possibilities. And as we go through these receipts, and as you heard from Stephen, he's already starting to acknowledge certain reactions to this. He's having emotions about things. And as you start going through your receipts, you will not be done. And I will not have to scold you, because you will already, just by taking the time to review this, start identifying things where you made maybe some ineffective financial decisions. Maybe you went out too much. Maybe you spent too much money in certain areas. Maybe you got bummed out or depressed and blew a lot of cash. Maybe you spend on things every day that are just a natural part of your routine that you had no idea cost that much when you added them all up. For most of us, we never look at our bank statements. We never review our debit card statements. So those little $2 and $3 swipes that we're making actually add up. And not just in our wallet, as far as money going out. But if we're buying junk food and garbage, our waistline is adding up too. I always tell people when they get started in the financial coaching process and we get to this budgeting point that they're going to find out that as a result of managing their finances, their lives are going to improve exponentially because they're going to feel better, they're going to look better, and they're going to be generally healthier. Because junk food costs so much more to buy a package of crap to eat as opposed to buying a piece of fresh fruit for 30 cents. You can have a piece of fresh fruit for 30 cents, and you can buy a candy bar for $2, okay? So what's going to be better for you in the long term? Not just about instant gratification, but what's going to be better for you in the long term? And so I won't have to lord over all of these things to you, because you'll already be doing it to yourself as you start going through this. And then you're going to like have this funky feeling, and it's going to be maybe a pit in your stomach or a bad taste in your mouth. You're going to find that you, because you're actually looking at this probably for the first time in this fashion, you're going to be making some decisions about how you feel. And I don't want you to wallow in that misery and say all hope is lost. Okay, I want you to address those feelings, acknowledge how you feel right now, and know and associate that to that negative behavior. And what we want to do is create positive associations with the things that we do want in life and the things that we are accomplishing and in control of. And so allow yourself to punish yourself, to feel the guilt and chastise and berate yourself as you're going through this list and seeing, because I won't have to tell you what's a need and what's a want. You'll figure it out on your own. I don't have to be the bad guy, thank goodness, because between the three of you that you're meeting with, me, myself, and I, one of those guys is going to feel bad. And as a result, you can address him individually. And if it's you and a significant other, well, there's just going to be more people to the mix. And you're going to see the things, the mistakes that you've made, and you're going to find out in no short order what you need to be doing to be successful, to get in the right place. And you're going to take now, once you start and get them all categorized and on all added up, what you want to do is use a tried and true NLP technique that we call a six-step reframe. And the value and the benefit of the six-step reframe is identifying what it is about a particular behavior or spending pattern that we're doing that is damaging. And as we know, an assumption in NLP is We do everything with a positive intent and purpose. Whether or not it's beneficial in the real world is not related to what we do. It always has a positive intent and purpose. So what we want to identify is what it is that we are doing that is causing this negative behavior, and what we want to do, or the negative financial impact. So for Stephen, he talked about going out to eat too much. So in his charge, when we addressed this the last time he was on air, is we said, okay, well, let's take a look at what is the benefit of going out to eat. Well, he said, hey, it's fun, it's exhilarating, but essentially it's communal dining. And fortunately for him, when he, in his mind, created his alternatives, what he did was kept that communal feeling. So he enjoined all of his roommates and his relatives, and then we even said, oh, let's talk Dad into coming over and cooking, because I know firsthand what a great chef he is. And then after we take and find out what the positive intent and purpose is, now we get to be creative. And in this creativity, what we're going to do is figure out, how can I receive the same benefits in a more cost-effective, financially beneficial manner for myself and my family? And that's all we're going to do. And that's what makes our savings and spending plans so different than budgeting. That's why we break the budget here. On previous broadcasts, I've likened budgeting to dieting, and it's because people think of it as something they go on to and off of. So when they gain extra weight, they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go on a diet and I'm going to lose 10 pounds. And then when they're done sacrificing, starving, giving something up, and they can't take it any longer, then they go out and binge. Well, that same mindset happens when you create a budget. And budgeting is from the French word bouger, which was actually a woman's, you know, small cocktail purse or handbag where you could fit maybe a lipstick, your keys, and $20 in. And because you have to make all of those choices, because this bouger only holds so much, you had to really think about, what am I bringing with me? And you can only sacrifice for so long before you're going to go nuts, and you can only be deprived. We're human beings. We're emotional creatures. And our desires are going to overwhelm us at some point. And we're just going to go out, and then it's going to be worse than whatever it is, you know, than if we would have been able to have it all the way along. Just think about, you know, how you love chocolate cake, and every day you walk past this piece of chocolate cake, and you're like, no, I'm on a diet, no, I'm on a diet. And then as soon as the diet's over, you go, and then you buy the chocolate cake, and you wind up eating the whole cake instead of just a modest slice. You know, you could have had just a small portion here and there, you know, in moderation, and been able to enjoy the same benefits of having that chocolate cake without completely getting rid of it, but maybe just had a bite or two and you tasted it slower and you savored it. Well, that's what we can do. It was creating a huge financial impact on his life in a negative manner. And so he put on his thinking cap, and you can download this broadcast and listen to it again, and he came up with a very creative way to enjoy the same foods, to enjoy the same sense of community dining, but do it in his own house so he could reap the benefits of communal dining and have more moolah left over in his wallet. And so that's all about what the healthy savings and spending plan is how do we keep a balance or a happy medium? So that's what we're looking for. What is our happy medium? So as you are going through and reviewing each category and find out if you're overspending in each category, what can I be creative on? Now, if you are in financial crisis versus doing a healthy money management wellness program, then you're going to wind up having to cut as opposed to be creative. There's no two ways about it. But when you cut, if you are in financial crisis, the loss of an income, somebody's on disability, maybe you had a familial change, an unexpected pregnancy, we've got a new baby, maybe we have got the care of a long-term care of an indigent parent on our hands. A variety of things can change our finances that have nothing to do with us. But we wind up becoming obligated to. So as a result of this obligation,
we have to make adjustments. And if you are in the crisis mode, you don't have to sacrifice forever. What you're going to do is saying, I know, because I'm in crisis, that I must make a radical change to make sure that my life is on track. And I know that if I make this radical change now and start sacrificing and making some choices, as opposed to a true sacrifice where you're saying, I'm never going to have it again, but say, I'm going to have it not now. I am going to choose to have it later instead of now, and make an active choice, that gives you a level of accountability and empowerment over your finances. I'm not giving this up totally. I haven't forsaken chocolate cake. I haven't forsaken eating out or whatever it is that you like to do, you know, whether it's going race car driving or traveling. You are not giving it up forever. But what you're saying is, I am choosing to defer my gratification to later so I can get my financial package under control. And once we get our finances under control, and we can create this healthy savings and spending plan, it's going to allow us to become that much closer to our goals that we set in our Dreams with Deadlines segment. And the sooner we can create our healthy savings and spending plan, the sooner we can get in line with what our Dreams with Deadlines are. And that's the whole purpose of creating a healthy savings and spending plan, as opposed to just taking and budgeting and saying, I'm going to do without this and I'm going to do without that. You're going to find a lot of things as you go through this process of creating your healthy savings and spending plan as you are completing the second phase of the Keys and the Keys to Riches, which is your assessment plan. You started by gathering all the receipts. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we did it in an organic fashion. We created this assessment in an organic fashion where we didn't address anything. We just shoved it in an envelope, and if we didn't have a tangible paper receipt, we wrote it down, and we created our own receipt, because what we wanted to do was get an organic look at how we spend, because we're highly emotional creatures, and we buy on emotion and justify with facts later, that we have to take, and knowing that we're doing this, we can look objectively at how we spend differently at different times, because we spend differently at the beginning of the month versus the end of the month. We also spend differently at the beginning of the paycheck versus the end of the paycheck. You may find yourself at a nightclub right after you cast your paycheck, and you're like, hey, everybody, I'll buy another round. I just got paid. And then you're like scrambling to find two nickels to rub together until the next paycheck comes, just so you can buy a top ramen, so you can have some noodles for lunch, or something, you can have a meal. And so what we're trying to do is get rid of that cycle, that cyclical wave of, I have money, I don't have money, I have money, I don't have money, and create a healthy savings and spending plan that strategizes how we save and spend our money. And I saved it for the end, but I'm gonna but it's the first part of our healthy savings and spending plan. And it's called savings. And we need to do it first. And I know if I had a live audience here, and I kind of do because I'm sitting on a tarmac with a bunch of people in front of me, if I took a survey and I said, how many of them will do something for somebody else before they do something for themselves, most people would raise their hand. And I quote to you the title of a book, Beware of the Naked Man Who Offers You His Shirt. And the reason is because we can't take care of others until we take care of ourselves. And what happens when we spend on credit cards is we are borrowing our future unearned income for today's instant gratification. And as a result of this instant gratification, I gotta have it now mentality, we're actually paying more for what it was than if we would have saved appropriately and deferred our gratification to a later point in time when we are more financially prepared and able to do so. So what we have to work on and what we have to be really cognizant of is we need to be saving along with our spending. First off, we're going to stop borrowing our future unearned income. And if we can't pay cash for it, we can't afford it. Or if it's a matter of having to pay on plastic, like prepaying rental car and things like that, if we cannot afford to pay for it at the end of the month when that bill comes in and pay it completely off, then we just don't need to be doing it. We need to create other alternatives, because the first part of this healthy savings and spending plan must occur. And it's called a savings and spending plan for a reason. And we're going to start paying ourselves first. Instead of borrowing our future unearned income, we're going to pay ourselves first. We're going to do it today. And I used to say that for a latte a day, you can become a millionaire. For a latte a day. And then I thought about it, and I said, well, you know what? That's not really congruent with what we do here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. Because that means we have to give up the latte. So instead, I was watching this NBC millionaire study they did on CNBC. And what you need to do to become an automatic millionaire, is to pay yourself first. And when you get up and you go to work, that first hour that you work in a day needs to be for you. You're worth 1 hour a day, right? You're a slave to all these other people for the rest of that money because you have borrowed your future unearned income. But you must absolutely work that first hour of the day financially for you. So if you make $10 an hour, then you need to set aside $10 a day. If you make $20 an hour, $30, I don't care what it is, because there are a lot of six-figure earners out there that are listening to this broadcast that spend more than they make. So it doesn't matter how much you make. It only matters how much you save. But you're worth one-eighth of your income-producing capacity, right? One-eighth? I know that I'm worth one-eighth. So what we need to do is set aside that first hour every day for us, because we're worth it. We are totally worth it. We are 100% completely worthy of working one-eighth of our lives for ourselves to create financial stability and create our future financial independence. And we can do that today, 1 hour at a time. How empowering is that? Think about that. So instead of the sacrificing of the latte, we're going to do one thing proactively for us, and that first hour of every day is ours, and we're going to focus on that. So pretty much that summarizes what your healthy savings and spending plan is all about. So all you have to do is sort these receipts, start your meeting with the three most important people, me, myself, and I, or including your spouse, too. And after you sort all of these receipts into their appropriate categories and have your meeting, then you are going to create the savings and spending plan. And the savings part starts with 1 hour of every day that you're working for yourself. And you need to set it aside in long-term savings. You got to build your emergency fund first. If you have to reach to a credit card anytime the car breaks or the kid has to go to the doctor, you got to build your emergency fund first. 6 months worth of income. Then we're going to start on our long-term, our midterm savings, and that's for vacations, for holiday expenditures, because we know that Christmas comes around at the same time every year, birthdays are at the same time every year. Those don't move. So you can start a long-term savings for those types of items. And then our retirement years. We have to be focused on creating our own financial retirement program, because the government is not going to take care of us. As soon as we accept that, the further along we're going to be. So, are you guys ready? Let's do our key statement. Here's our nuts and bolts for this week's key of Break the Budget. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. So our key statement today for our Break the Budget key is, I know that in order for me to become truly financially independent, I must assess my savings and spending plan. And if I don't have one in place, I must create one. Because if I don't watch what I'm doing every day with my daily dollars, I won't be able to accomplish my dreams with deadlines. So in order for me to achieve financial independence, I must create a healthy savings and spending plan. Now, our key affirmation for this week is, I am creative when devising my healthy savings and spending plan. I am creative when developing my healthy savings and spending plan. Now, we do our affirmations several times throughout the day. The first time we do our affirmations is we pull our list out right before we go to bed, and we get those affirmations, we say them out loud to ourselves, so our subconscious mind will focus on that while we're creating restful, restorative sleep. And as we program our brains for this type of success, then all night long, our brain, the universe's greatest supercomputer, will then create a new neural pathway for us to accomplish our affirmations. Then, in the morning, after you have arisen from a restful, restorative sleep, before you kiss your spouse or brush your teeth or comb your hair, you're going to pull out your affirmations again. And then, as you read these affirmations out loud to yourself, it focuses your conscious mind on the true power and the goals of today. Not to feed the dog, water the grass, drop the kids off at school, go to work. No. We're going to focus on our affirmations because that's what our life's purpose is about, is creating our financial independence so you and your family have the freedom to choose to do what you want to do every single day. And then, because what we think about, we bring about, what we want to do is have our affirmations at the ready anytime we encounter negativity throughout the day, whether it's a spouse, significant other, boss, subordinate, coworker, client, teacher, student, child, parent, whomever wrecks your day or attempts to wreck your day with their negativity, casting aspersions, you are just going to reject that because you are in control of how you respond because you have responsibility. And so you're going to just slough off all of that. And after that negative experience is over, you're going to run to your affirmations, and then you're going to repeat your affirmations aloud to retrain your brain to focus on the positive, higher purpose of the day, which is making those affirmations come to fruition with your daily tasks. That's the way we're going to become truly successful at this. And let me just tell you, several times I find myself, especially this past week, having to pull out my affirmations and go over them and over them and over them and over them because I had so many negative things happen in one day. I couldn't believe, what am I in a negative rainy cloud? But I didn't let it deter me, and I got out my affirmations and I said them again. And that's what you need to do. Anytime you encounter negativity, you must just cast it aside and replace those thoughts. And don't dwell on that because what you think about, you bring about. So you're going to want to focus your mind on the positive things you're trying to bring about and what your higher purpose is for the day. And then, last but not least, we have our key action item for the week. And our key action item is simply to download this broadcast and gather your receipts that you've saved and utilize the tools that we talked about today to create your healthy savings and spending plan. That is your charge for the week. I'll look forward to speaking with you again on Wednesday. And I want to thank my special guest, Larry Wingen, and also Stephen Light for joining us. We're moving along. I can't believe it. We're on the seventh key, and here we are breaking the budget. So it's wheels up on the way to Daytona. So I want to thank you guys all for joining us on our special Daytona Valentine's Day broadcast. Happy, happy Valentine's to you and your loved ones. Thank you for tuning in. You have been listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth radio show. I am she, your hostess with a financial gnosis, and I'll look forward to chatting with you on Wednesday. Here's to your financial independence.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.